Hello, this is Bianca Westwood from Gillette Soccer Saturday on Sky Sports, and you are listening to the V2 Football Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I'm your host Shane Lees, and joining me this week I've got Chris Lapin. Or Lapin. Look, it's French. I learned rabbit when I was young. Chris Lapin, Rabbit Man, and Anthony Kendrick.
Hello.
Okay, this week we are going to talk about the England draw.
Yeah,
so we're talking about the England draw. Okay, so what do we all think about this England draw? Are we pleased or are we thinking this is going to be kind of difficult?
I'm looking forward to the Welsh game. That's obviously going to be a great game for us all to watch, and it being on BBC and all. I can't wait for that.
It's going to be great to have a proper home nations game in an international tournament.
Yeah.
It's the second game as well, so, depending on how the first games go, that could be like a win or you're out sort of scenario.
The only, bad thing for me is that if England end up not doing well in this tournament, as I predict we shall end up doing, I would want Wales to do quite well. Because I know the Welsh would be all smug and bastardy about it, but I quite like the Welsh. I lived there for 3 years, and let's face it, if an English team can't win, I at least want a British team to win. And Scottish aren't going to be there, and let's face it, the Northern Irish are fucked. Their group is ridiculous. They're screwed. So if
I think when the Northern Ireland look at the Ireland's group, they're probably happy with their group.
they both got absolutely screwed. But yeah, no, I'm pleased with the draw. I think Russia is a harder game than people realise.
Russia are a bit hit and miss. They can either be brilliant.
I was going to say, Russia have just brought in a new manager to replace Capello. It's going to be very difficult.
And he is a good manager, I will
say. Yeah, but it's difficult to say how Russia, for sure, whether they're going to be a decent outfit, whether they're going to be bottom of the group, losing all the games.
For me, I think the big thing with Russia is because they're going to have the 2018 World Cup, they're going to want to have a strong showing to sort of set them up for that. I think they will be expecting qualification from the group stage quite easily. They'll be expecting to finish first or second, the Russians. They'll be saying England, yeah, they're the other team who are going to be up there, and they'll be expecting to go past Wales and Slovakia.
I think apart from ourselves, I don't think anyone's expecting Wales to do anything. I don't think anyone's really going to be too fussed about them. I think if you ask your typical German fan or you know French or your Russian, Wales there.
The Welsh fans will be expecting to do quite well. They're on a bit of a hype train. They've got good players, to be fair. But
I read somewhere that they've sold out their allocation for the England game already.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, that's a big game. The only bigger game we could have got in that terms was England v Scotland, I think. Mm. But obviously that one wasn't going to happen. But I think I also like it that it's going to be a good opportunity to start a new rivalry. Because England and Wales don't play each other too often.
I remember the last time we played.
It was in the qualifiers, I think it was about 2007 or something.
Yeah, we don't play each other often, and they are a good team. They're probably the second best British nation, if not on par, possibly. And so I think it'll be a good opportunity to have a new rivalry, because the Scottish one, it's one we all love, but it's not really a competition. They've been worse than us for a long time. The only thing we get with the Scotland rivalry is that it turns into how much do we win by, or if we don't win, it's an absolute bloody disaster because we absolutely should have won.
The Scotland rivalry is a lot better in the 90s.
Yeah, it's good if the Scottish team are good, but they're not that good. And Northern Ireland, the problem with Northern Ireland is we kind of like them too much. Everyone likes the Northern Irish apart from the Irish. Now, the Irish is a big one, but everyone kind of holds back with the Irish one because they're worried about terrorism.
If we win the group and stuff. Because if we win the group, we'll get the third place from A, B, and C, which could be Romania, Poland, Czech Republic, or Turkey.
Yeah, I mean,
if we put runners up, we'll get runners up from group F, which would either be Iceland or Austria. So it doesn't matter. But
well, it's an
I just don't want to finish third because we'll probably get Spain.
I do actually genuinely think this isn't just me being pessimistic. Finishing third is a real possibility. Because those sides, you've got Wales who are going to be so up for this competition. The Russians, I think they really are going to expect a strong competition. They've got a decent side at the moment. And they're going to want to set up for 2018. Mm. And Slovakia are not half as bad as people think they are.
I think assuming if we finish third, we'll go through is a bit of a brave thing to think.
Well, I think, what is it? It's...
Four out of six.
Yeah, four out of six.
A two-thirds chance, but there is a possibility you can finish third and go out. I think, I don't know, it is going to be a competitive group. It's not a,
I've seen a few people saying, you know, this is a group England should walk. I don't buy that at all.
Well, it is a good draw. I wouldn't have liked Wales, but apart from that, it is generally quite a good draw.
Yeah, we are the favourites in that group, but it's by such a slim margin, and when you get to international competitions, anything can happen. Who the hell predicted in the World Cup Costa Rica would do as well as they did? Anything can happen. Slovakia could turn up and have one of the best tournaments they've ever had. I mean, what was it, Denmark quite a few years ago? And Greece in
92, Denmark.
Yeah, Greece did it
as well.
He came
in as a late replacement.
People don't anticipate that these smaller nations can go on to do big things. And Russia, as I said, they're going to be wanting to do a big thing. Wales are going to be wanting to go on and do well. They're going to be right up for that tournament. It is a very big possibility that whilst we are the favourites in the group in terms of reputation, in terms of turning up to the tournaments, I think we're going to have the sort of the most negative attitude. We'll be turning up and thinking we've got the most to lose. We'll turn up to Wales game saying we don't want to lose this rather than really want to win it. I think that's what the team will turn up doing. The Russian game, I think we'll underestimate. We won't realise quite how much they'll be up for and quite how good that team is. And the Slovakia game, I think it's a similar sort of situation, that it depends how their games go, but they are a better team than I think we'll acknowledge. So I think it is a good group, but it's also at the same time a very dangerous group. It's one of those groups we could very much underperform in, and it wouldn't actually be that much of a shock.
What order would you put them in then? I was just going to say, what order would you put them in? Because I would say, I'd say England to win the group, then Wales, Russia, Slovakia, in that order.
I would say it will be a very, very close group. I would say it's going to be mostly draws. But the England fan says England top, Russia second, Wales third, and Slovakia fourth. But when it's with those top three teams, I think it's any kind of rotation. It's going to be on the throw of a dice. These international tournaments, there's so few chances in the games. And it all depends about mentality. It all depends about how well the teams have got the tactics sorted. It's all the mental stuff when it comes to tournaments. And England, historically, we don't do well at that. And I think the Welsh will be up for it, the Russians will be up for it, and the Slovakians will be up for it. I think we'll be more concerned about losing than we will about winning. And that's going to separate us from the other teams in that group.
Yeah, the big problem with these 24-team tournaments is that because you've got that third place, teams don't tend to go up for the win in like the first game, as long as you don't lose your first. I can see a lot of draws in the first round of games.
We saw it with the expanded qualification. A lot of big teams took it very easily, and they ended up regretting that big time. The Netherlands, they would never have anticipated they wouldn't qualify, not with the expanded group stage. And yet, they took the pressure off. They sort of thought, oh, it's okay, we can do kind of badly. And I think you combine that with potentially a bad attitude coming into the tournament, or at least a negative attitude. Like I said, it would not be a surprise if we very much underachieved in this group stage. But at the same time, we are favourites. It's a weird mix.
Sorry, I think Chris does make a valid point. Right, I think the key thing is not to lose games. You know, that is the thing. Like, you know, drawing games is okay, I would say.
Well, it all depends how well the other third place teams do. Like you said, it's four out of six. We could get, if we drew all three games, on the one hand, that's, you know, not bad, especially against the teams you're up against. It's not bad. But then again, that could be, you know, the fifth worst placed third team.
Mm.
Well, no, if we draw all three games, then chances are we'd go through because our goal difference would be zero.
Well,
other teams on 3 points, if they win one and lose two, chances are they'll have a negative goal difference. It's a dangerous game to be playing, but...
Yeah, I think all of this proves this is a harder group than a lot of people have acknowledged.
But it is a good group compared to what we could have got.
It's a real mixed bag. Yeah, it's a lot better than we could have got. There's a lot of groups of death out there. Northern Ireland, Germany, Poland, and the Ukraine.
Yeah, that they've got no chance.
Germany, who are I would say joint favourites. Poland, who have the best striker in the world, and Ukraine, who have two of the best wingers in the world. The Ukraine are actually got a very, very good side. I mean, they've got.
Who's the other best? Winger,
Yevhen Konoplyanka and Andrei Yarmolenko. They've also got Denis Garmash, Eugene Kakaridi, Rakitsky. I think they've got this left back who's quite good. It's Piatov in goal. Ukraine, people forget how much of a good side they have. But I think they're almost in a similar way, similar to England. They sometimes just don't turn up in the right mentality. But I think Northern Ireland, I really wanted them to do well. I'm so glad when they qualified, but that is a group of death. Zero points.
Back sneaky win and getting
I can still get the third place. I've said I prefer to be in Northern Ireland's group than I would be in the Republic of Ireland's group.
What's that? Italy?
Italy, Belgium and Sweden.
Yeah, that's a pretty horrible group as well. I think that group is probably worse simply because you've got, like with Poland and the Ukraine, there's the good chance that the other players, apart from their big players, are not going to turn up. Or, you know, they're going to underperform, or the big players will underperform. But with Italy, Belgium and Sweden,
the thing is,
they're good all-round teams.
I can see Ireland beating Sweden to the third place. Italy and Belgium are surely the favourites to qualify from Group E, Ireland's group. But Sweden may finish bottom. It's Sweden, you know, sort of average. I think they're about Ireland's level, so I think that'll be a straight fight between the two of them.
John Waters vs Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who will come out on top?
Well, it's the opening game in that group, so that will be the key game.
It's a big... Personally, I know a lot of English fans don't like the Irish, and I can completely understand why. I do like the Irish, and I hope they actually do quite well. I hope all of the British teams do quite well. I know a lot of people don't like the Irish, but for me, it's sort of like they're... If Great Britain's a family, Ireland are the uncle who got away. You know, or they're like the odd cousin. Yeah, we're still family, we just hate each other.
Should we move on to the FIFA?
Okay, we'll move on to, FIFA. You may have missed it because of how much has been going on in this last week, but there has been a very major development with FIFA, and it is major, in the sense the Swiss, with the backing of the US Department of Justice, the Swiss Justice Ministry, has started freezing FIFA assets. They've started freezing bank accounts in Zurich. And that sounds like it's just, you know, part and parcel of the whole corruption thing. This is massive, because what this means is that they have proof. They have proof that this money was obtained illegally. And because the only way they could have frozen those assets is if they went to a judge and they set out their proof and said, look, we can tell you this money was obtained illegally, so we're going to subpoena them, we're going to, you know, we want a warrant to go and freeze these assets. And they would have had to have had unequivocal proof that this was corrupt. And if they have that, that's a big deal, because that means it's more than just smoke and mirrors. I've said a lot of bad things about the way the FIFA election is going. I think that is going very badly. I don't think there's going to be any real progress on that front. But at least for people, you know, the FBI and the Swiss Justice Ministry, at least they are taking this properly. They are taking this seriously, because if they are going this far, they have proven corruption. That means in all probability, Blatter's screwed. I mean, Platini's probably screwed, and that's probably why they are turning out to be, you know, going to get a lifetime ban at the moment. So it's a big deal. So as much as this has probably passed under the radar in terms of all the major FIFA news and major footballing news, this is kind of the turning point when corruption becomes more than just a speculation, but it's proven. It hasn't quite gone through the courts yet, but the judges have approved the warrants to freeze the assets. And it's not like the assets of the individuals who have been corrupt. This is FIFA's money. FIFA's own money has been frozen here. So it's a massive, massive deal. And hopefully this can be a real start for the, you know, the Departments of Justice to go and absolutely attack FIFA and pull it to shreds, because that's what we need.
What do you make of Platini? He said there's no point turning up to his hearing next week because the verdict's already been decided. Is it him trying to, well, not turning up because he knows he's guilty, or do you think it's not an actual point?
There's a point there in the sense that this is a political decision, but it's also the right decision. I mean, I'm probably risking being sued, but he is corrupt. There's no question about it. He gave Qatar the vote for the World Cup, and mysteriously his son ends up working for a major Qatari firm. This guy is corrupt. It just, all of it wasn't technically illegal. It was just little favours. And then, of course, there was the major thing with Blatter and the payment. It is a political thing.
I was working years ago.
Huh?
He did work for Blatter years ago, and he was paying him back for that work he did.
Yeah,
he just forgot to pay.
He suddenly waited all that time until he needed to secure his support. Yeah, no. It's the right decision to go and ban him, and for life, for both of them, Blatter and Platini. But the way they've gone about it is it's a political manoeuvre. Whoever is in the executive committee right now is, and I'd imagine that is Sheikh Salman, and that is Tokyo Sex Whale, they're looking to cut these guys out because they know if they do come in, all of a sudden Europe's support will be divided, and that they're going to be alongside the North American Confederation, the Kingmakers, in the election. So it is a political move. It's a move to try and distance FIFA away from the corruption thing whilst also not actually doing anything about it. So I can understand why he is a bit peeved, but it's just a matter of time until he's proven outright to be doing some dirty stuff here. And like I said, the thing about that they actually have proof now, and we know they have proof because they've actually managed to freeze these assets, it's going to involve all of these people. It's going to involve them all. So it's I can understand why he isn't going to turn up to it, because the decision probably was made quite a long time ago before they had any proof of substance. But at the same time, he is guilty of sin, so it doesn't make a difference.
Can I ask one other question? Do you think it's fair to be picking on a man who's sick and ill and has been seeing the devil because he's that ill?
Oh, I'm assuming you're referring to Sepp Blatter and his...
Yeah, they're just picking on a sick man, aren't they?
Yeah, Sepp Blatter has... If you haven't been paying attention to this one, Sepp Blatter has been having an extended nervous breakdown over a period of weeks and months. I can sympathise. He is an old man. For people saying, oh, he's obviously putting it all on. He is an old man, and he's being told, look, you're corrupt and there's a very good chance you're going to be going to jail. I imagine that probably messes you up a little bit. So it's probably there's probably an element of truth to it, but it's sort of like, you know, you reap what you sow. He's probably unlucky in terms of his predecessor, João Havelange, managed to die before he was indicted. Sepp Blatter doesn't look like he's going to be that fortunate.
Did any of you watch the Panorama BBC recently? That was really good. Worth a watch if anyone's...
It's still on my recorder.
Yeah, I haven't watched it, but I know it's by Andrew...
Yeah, it's on there for a month.
Yeah, it's by Andrew Jennings, and he's a very, very good investigative reporter. He's done quite a few books. There's one called Foul, which I would advise anyone who wants to learn more about this to go and read. It's very cheap, and it pretty much sums up everything for you. But we're going to move on to the other major story that's happened.
Major story.
Major story.
Has there been another
major story? Yeah. #Jose to United, that's what we're going to do.
Okay, well, we'll quickly move past Jose to United. Mourinho's been sacked.
To get a trade in.
I was amazed. Genuinely, I thought he'd stay. I said on the podcast last week or the week before, I said he'd get through it and he'd eventually turn the team around. I was shocked to see he was sacked.
It's one of those situations, isn't it? You're both shocked and not shocked at the same time.
I think it's hard to argue with the... You know, he's probably... Maybe should have been sacked. It's hard to argue with it on the results this season. But, personally, I'd have kept him.
I think it's one of those ones where, but I think for...
It's not my club.
You know, right-thinking people, for people who are sort of being a bit calm and a bit logical and maybe don't have quite as much invested in this, you're looking at this and going, this is madness. 7 months ago, he was the best manager in England, no question. Maybe the best manager in the world. 7 months. It's the same as the Gary Monk one, I think. 7 months ago, Gary Monk guides Swansea to their best ever finish.
Gary Monk was just based on 11 games, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think what happened before that.
So. Yeah, guides them to their best ever finish, and then 7 months later, he's gone. And it's the same situation with Mourinho.
Chelsea, they finished 8 points clear last season. What a cup.
It is crazy in that sense. But on the other hand, their Chelsea Football Club, they're what, 16th? They are genuinely at the moment, I know it sounds like ridiculous, but they are genuinely in a relegation fight.
Yeah.
They're in relegation form. If they keep up this form towards the end of the season, they will go down. And I'm just doing that based on points per game.
Somebody asked on the forum this week, would they get parachute payments if they went down? Or something?
They would, I think.
Yeah, I
thought. But yeah, no, they're in genuine relegation form. This is Chelsea Football Club. It's not like it's Everton, where, you know, they're a team that sometimes do really well, but other times they finish mid-table, so, oh, it's bad, but it's not a disaster. This is Chelsea. They should have been competing for the title this year. Most people had them pegged as favourites again.
Yeah.
This kind of decline, someone has to pay for it.
But then do you think
it's going to come in then? Do you reckon it'll be...
Oh, sorry, I'm just going to quickly go to Anthony there.
Sorry.
Do you think there's a serious risk Chelsea will get relegated, though, like, if they kept Mourinho? Because I don't see that happening. I think they'd have had a bad season, but they would have... next would have got out of a bad form.
I want to say no, they wouldn't have got relegated, but at the same time, everyone kept saying, this next game will be where they kickstart. This next game will be where they kickstart. And it just... It's not like they were suddenly, like, improving the way they were playing and just not getting the results, was it? They were getting worse. The game against Southampton, where we beat them 3-1, I said at the time, we were quite lucky that they played well. They have started playing worse since then. And that was when people started turning around and saying, this is a full-blown crisis now. And they've declined. So, yeah, as much as I want to say if they kept Mourinho, they wouldn't have got relegated. At what point would this have all started turning around? Because we're approaching the midway point of the season, and he's going to start playing all the same games over again. He's going to have the hard teams to face all over again. I wouldn't have wanted to say there's in a relegation fight, because it sounds so ridiculous. Chelsea, Mourinho, Hazard in a relegation fight. But at the same time, you can't deny the form they're in.
We've not played Man United yet.
So they'd still have two of those games against a team that just doesn't concede goals. I can understand why they sat Mourinho based on the current season and the fact this is Chelsea Football Club. There's no manager who should have put them in this position. Even someone like Mark Hughes or Sam Allardyce would probably have not got them in this position. But then I also think what a manager does the season before and the kind of loyalty they've shown should go a lot further than it has done. He came back after he was sacked. Let's remember that. That's a big deal. He didn't walk away back then. It wasn't mutual. He was sacked and it was completely ridiculous. He came back because he came back for the fans. He came back because he loved the club. And then he goes and guides, I think it's what, two trophies and a title?
Yeah. So do you think they're being unfair to Mourinho?
Yeah, I do, because he showed that team a lot of loyalty. He showed them a lot of commitment. He took them to a title. That was what they wanted. And I think it was the players. I don't think it was Mourinho. Mourinho made mistakes, but they were mistakes that the players deliberately escalated. John Terry, the substitution, when he got substituted, a lot of people blew it out of proportion, said it's a massive, massive deal. I didn't agree with that, but it turns out it's looking like that was a big deal. And for me, that's someone like John Terry throwing his toys out the pram. That's him saying, oh, I'm not a starter now, I'm going to turn this dressing room against you. Instantly. All those years of loyalty and, you know, we love the manager, turned around because, what, some petty little player can't stand being taken off the pitch for half a game? Fuck off. And it's the players getting the manager sacked, I think. They've been the ones who've been underperforming. It's clear Jose Mourinho's tried multiple different things to try and turn it around. The players aren't having it. And as at that point, yes, you can say he's lost the dressing room. At the same time, you have to say, surely at some point, players have to be held accountable and not the manager. So for me, yeah, I think Mourinho's been hard done by. He'll be right back in a top job in no time. I have no doubts about that.
Ridiculous United hashtag.
But yeah, I can understand why it's happened now, because of the season they've had. But overall, in terms of the whole narrative of Mourinho at Chelsea, it's a fucking travesty. It's an absolute travesty.
What do you think of the rumours that it's Brendan Rodgers till the end of the season, then Pep Guardiola come in?
Well, Guardiola's announcing his future next week. He said he's going to confirm exactly what he's going to do.
It will be Gus Hiddink or Brendan Rodgers till the end of the season.
I tell you what, though, if I'm just going to say this about Guardiola, if he is turning around and saying I will announce my future at the end of the week, he's not staying.
He said he's going to confirm exactly what he's doing.
But there's a very easy way to look at it. If he was planning on staying at Bayern, he wouldn't have turned around and said, oh, I'll tell you all in a week. He'd have gone, no, what do you want about? I'm staying at Bayern, you nutters. That's all that covered. It would have been a quick question in a press conference, slapped away with the back of his hand. If you turn around and say, I'm going to declare what I'm going to be doing next year in a week, that's a setup for, I plan on leaving.
A new contract or something with Bayern. It could be, you know...
Yeah, I don't think he'll be there next year. I have to say, I don't think Guardiola would be a good appointment. I don't think he'd be a good appointment for Chelsea. I don't think he'd be a good appointment necessarily for any Premier League club. Because I think with Guardiola, he is the kind of manager who can build on a good thing. He's the kind of manager who requires a team to have dominance. Look at his history. It's Bayern and it's Barca. It's teams who... In those Guardiola years, never had any questions about whether or not they were seriously being challenged for the league. And they used that and they springboard that into good European success. At a team like Chelsea or United or any other team in the Premier League, every single game is a challenge. You don't have the luxury of dropping off. Every single game is a challenge. And you don't have a winter break, you can't play the kind of physically demanding football they play there, of passing around teams all the time. You just can't do it. So I think as much as he could be a good appointment, it's so much of a risk because you just have no guarantee the tactics are going to work out. Other managers have tried that high-pressing system, and so far, none of them have done it for a season because eventually they drop off. And no team since Sir Alex Ferguson has managed to put a dominance on the Premier League. So I think it all is kind of like pointing towards he comes in, everyone gets really, really excited, it's Guardiola, and it actually turns out him and the Premier League's not a good fit. Almost a bit of a Van Gaal situation. Yeah, Van Gaal was very good at teams which were dominant, but he was not particularly good with a team where you're going to have to fight for every single game when you're playing teams like Crystal Palace, and Crystal Palace are battering you. So I don't think Guardiola would be the man.
Well, Gus Hiddink's the favourite for the job, with Sky Bet anyway.
Which is almost very surprising considering how badly he did with the Netherlands.
Well, the thing is, for, in terms of betting anyway, it counts if you manage for 10 games, you're considered the permanent manager of a side. So, Gus Hiddink on a, you know, a deal till the end of the season.
It wouldn't be ridiculous. It'd be almost kind of similar to Benitez coming in. I have to say, I can't see Rodgers doing it because Rodgers would not want to come in for less than a season.
I don't think Rodgers would.
Yeah.
That's a managing. But then Benitez wasn't happy with it and only knew he was the manager after.
Okay, well, let's sort of sum up. Who would we think would be the best fit for Chelsea?
Short term or long term?
Whichever way you want to go about it.
I'd like Hiddink to the end of the season, and then...
who's the... What's his name? The Atletico coach.
Simeone,
yeah.
I think Simeone would be a good fit. Personally, I'm going to go again with someone they've gone to before, Carlo Ancelotti.
I was going to say that, but I don't think he'd go back.
I don't think he'd go back, no, but I think he would be the ideal fit. He knows the league. He's good at the league. He's a very versatile coach. It's kind of like of all the top managers that are around and are available and you could potentially get, especially if you threw enough money his way, it's Carlo Ancelotti, for God's sakes. He's probably the best one out there at the moment. I think everyone else is kind of a risk.
I think somebody who if you want to take a risk, I would I'd give Pochettino a chance at a big club.
He's only been at Tottenham for 16 games, hasn't he?
Yeah, but he was good at Southampton as well before. I'd really like to see him at a top club, but then I'm thinking United as well, to be honest. But yeah, if it was up to me, I would do everything to get Ancelotti in.
Yeah,
but I think there'll be some sort of interim deal for Hiddink or. Possibly Brendan Rodgers, I don't know. Someone, and then I think Guardiola's there next season.
How funny would it be if it was Rodgers? I will ask one quick question to both of you, because you're United fans. Let's say Louis van Gaal gets sacked by Christmas.
Everybody's United.
Would you genuinely want Jose Mourinho at United? The style of football he plays, remember, all of that sort of stuff included. Would you want him?
United, no.
No?
I don't.
Okay. So we'll finish it there. Thank you for joining us this week.
Make sure you check out our Christmas special on Monday, where we select our Premier League 11 of the season so far, and you find out who is the mastermind of the podcast.
You will be very surprised. Thank you for joining us on this week's V2 Football podcast. Please check us out on Twitter and on Facebook at V2 Football. Thank you and goodbye.
Good night.
Bye.